Welcome to the Layer 8 Podcast. Each episode, we'll talk tools, techniques, and stories with the experts in open source intelligence and social engineering. This episode is brought to you by Compass CyberGuard. For a quote on your pen testing or social engineering test needs, send email to info@layer8podcast.org. Now, let's get on with the show. Welcome to another episode of the Layer 8 Podcast. We are here with our guest, Ritu Gill, also known as OSINT Techniques. Welcome, Ritu.
Thanks, Patrick. Thanks for having me on today. I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah, you're actually a second-time guest. We had you on this podcast a couple of years ago. So one of the things I'm really looking forward to is hearing about all the new things that you're up to. But just in case somebody has not listened to that episode yet, who are you and what do you do?
Okay, well, you said it. I'm Ritu Gill. I'm also known as OSINT Techniques Online. That's kind of my alias. It's also my company name, my consulting business. So I am an open source intelligence analyst. I work for law enforcement in Canada. I also have my own consulting business, which is OSINT Techniques. So I do investigations. I train people on how to use OSINT in investigations. I do a lot of different things. All things OSINT, though. You'll find me online in a lot of different places as well. Also, under my business name, typically.
All right. So we will talk a little bit about all of that stuff. But I also usually like to aim these episodes for all different types of people, whether they are just getting started in the field of OSINT or if they've been in it for a while. So how about if we start with, here's a question that I like to ask people. Is there a difference between data and intelligence when it comes to open source intelligence?
That's a great question. And I've heard it a few times. I've read some blog posts about it, and it does come up from time to time. I always tell people the difference is that when it's data, it's just it's information and it's raw, you know, meaning it's not processed. It hasn't gone through the intelligence cycle. The difference between data and intelligence is intelligence is created through analysis. And this is a common misunderstanding where someone will say, I'm doing OSINT, but they don't realize that, like, just collecting something and being like, hey, I found that. That's not exactly OSINT, right? We have to give meaning to our findings. And there's a whole process with it, right? You need to have an objective when you're doing your research, because you want to know what you're looking for so you don't go down that rabbit hole. So I don't know if that explains it well, but that's the difference that I see between data and intelligence. It's just the raw, unprocessed data versus that where you've applied critical thinking, some analysis to give it meaning, and that is what develops into intelligence.
So you're doing your investigation and you find a little piece of data on your target. Now, there's no guarantee that that piece of information that you found is correct, it's accurate, anything like that. You know, maybe you were just given somebody's online username and you think, right, okay, I'm going to go searching for this username, and you find a first name and a last name. Some people might think, bingo, I got the person.
Right.
But what are you going to do to further validate that, to make sure that you're looking at the correct person, especially with the field that you're in, where you said you do a lot of law enforcement work?
Yeah, this is where, again, like verifying and validating is so important. So cross-referencing what you found with maybe other information you might have. Maybe you have some closed database information, right? I've seen it where somebody's posting on Facebook, just as an example. And, you know, maybe they have a very common name, but then when I look for any posts that indicate their birthday, I have that information from, you know, close sources saying, hey, I know their birthday, and everyone's wishing them happy birthday on that same date. And we have a photo. There's several pieces of information that I can validate, verify. So not everybody has access to closed databases, but I always tell people there's multiple ways we can verify information. So we never want to just take one piece of information and run with it. We want to make sure we can cross-reference it in some way. Can you find more information about that individual somewhere else? Is there any indicators from, you know, maybe what they're saying or the comments they're leaving on blogs or other social media posts that indicate something about them, right? Even things like a username, right? So that's a prime example. There's many Ritu Gills out there. So if you go and say, hey, I know, okay, that's Ritu Gill. Well, there's so many, and maybe I use Ritu Gill, maybe I don't. However, there has to be more information. Like, do you know what I look like? You know, do I look like that same person? Am I from the same area in the world, right? All these little pieces of information can tell you something. So really, like, looking for details, I would say, is really important.
Yeah, I really like that, being able to correlate multiple pieces of data to turn it into that type of intelligence that you're really looking for at that point. Also, for people that are just looking to start out, what types of skills or abilities do you think make somebody a great OSINT analyst?
I would say critical thinking. So when someone can critically look at some piece of information, being able to have that mindset will really help you in your investigations and your research process. But at the same time, there's things like being organized, right? Having really good writing skills, even those things, right? You got to write reports, you got to write up your findings. Are you clear and concise when you do that, or do you confuse the reader? So, you know, those things I think are important. Some things can be learned, and then some things I feel like you either have it or you don't, but I feel like you can learn a lot of these things if you put the time and effort into it. Another key thing, and I think earlier in my career, I'm still very keen. I was just younger, so, you know, more energy, but I was very persistent, and I still am, but it's like, you know, I don't give up. When I can't find something, I'm like, no, I'm going to find this. I'm going to find this person. You kind of have to, like, really dig in and not just give up once, you know, you have no results in Google or something like that.
And do you have any tips for people where they have that persistence, and you've mentioned, like, going down the rabbit hole and knowing when have you dug far enough and you've been as persistent as you can be and it's time to back up? Is there any kind of way to know, like, all right, I've gone far enough with this?
Yeah, I think, like, really it depends from analyst to analyst. So, for example, like with me, because, you know, the work I do and who I work for, it, you know, I have set number of maybe days I have to find the information and report back. That said, people that work in the private industry, you might only have 3 hours and you have to report back. So it depends on, like, who your customer is. That's what I think about that. Because when do you give up? I mean, you can have a checklist of, like, hey, if I can't find this person in 3 hours and I'm going to check these 10 things, then maybe you need to move on, or maybe you need to brainstorm with other OSINT people as to where you could go or what tools you could use, that kind of thing.
I've also seen you talk a little bit about the value of OPSEC, or operational security, as an investigator. Can you talk a little bit about, first, what is operational security? And as an investigator, why do I care about keeping my information private, secret, when I'm doing an investigation?
Yeah, so OPSEC is, again, yeah, you definitely have heard me talk about OPSEC. Operational security, it's so important. And the way I can explain it is this. It's something to not only protect yourself as an investigator, but also to protect the integrity of an investigation. So what it means is you don't want your information or file information to fall into the wrong hands, essentially. Okay. And it is a military term, but it really applies to OSINT work and OSINT investigators. I think it's something that every OSINT investigator needs to care about. And this is why we ask people to use research accounts, and also known as sock puppets, right? So just as, like, I mean, if you think of it, if you're a police officer and you investigate some bad guys, would you want them knowing where you live? Probably not, right? You need to make a list of what's important to you, and you want to protect that, right? That's like, having good OPSEC is so important.
Do you have any tips, tricks that you can give to people if somebody is kind of ghost-like, to be able to find some information about them? Are there other places that you can pivot off to for them?
Yeah, so I mention this often to, as well as a, kind of like an OSINT tip, is when you can't find your main target, you look at your secondary targets. So what does that mean? It means the people around your primary target. So family, friends, sometimes it's their grown children. Sometimes it's, sometimes it's their parents. But really, like, I feel like in somebody's circle, there's always a weak link. So that's what you're looking for. And often enough, if you find that person, you can backtrack and find your main target. So from the years of experience, I've always found that. Does that happen every time? No, it doesn't. It really depends on the person you're investigating and really what their online footprint looks like. But I find that as a tip has worked countless times for me.
Yeah, I really like that tip. It's often possible just to start digging into some of the other people, and then you see your target in some of the photos. And if it's a family member, well, maybe now you're into that person's home with background images and things like that, which if we're also talking a little bit about our OPSEC, our operational security, this can be another thing to kind of think about for yourself. When you start posting information about your friends and family, do you have permission from them to be posting those things? Like, anytime I post a picture of my child online, I always make sure that I ask them first, like, is it okay if I put this picture up and post this and get permission from that? I'm guessing that if people did that, it would make your life a good amount harder.
100%. And I think a lot of people, good on you for doing that. But I think a lot of people don't take those steps, and they end up posting or leaking out information that necessarily that person might not want out there, right? Especially if somebody's trying to be hidden or trying to be ghost-like, as you mentioned, you know, it's just, you're kind of giving them away.
Now, you also mentioned those research accounts or sock accounts or sock puppets that we've referred to in the past. This is an area that I've tried to dig into a little bit and had some trouble with. I don't know if you have tips or advice, where it seems to me anytime that I've tried, maybe I just don't have the right way of doing it, that they get discovered way too quickly, that it's often within a day or two of me creating this account, it'll get locked, and then I'll get that notification that I need to upload government ID to prove that this is me. Is this something that I'm doing wrong? Tips that you have on avoiding this?
You know, I have a few tips for sure. I get this question often, like, how are you creating research accounts? And I'm like, I'm just creating them. But these are the tips that I have for people that are struggling. It really depends how you're doing it, right? And it depends on what platform you're on as well. So like Facebook is really scrutinized, but Instagram, not as much, I find. But it could depend on what location you are in the world as well. What you need to do, and kind of the rule, is you need to act like a regular user. So what that means is, if you create an account, and I always recommend people have the burner phone, because they often want you to verify. And if you can't do that, well, who doesn't have a phone this day and age, right? So that's step one. But once you bypass everything and you get onto, say, Facebook, I always say, like, act like a real user. So post a profile photo, you know, like some pages, maybe join the local hockey team or something like that, because then it shows like you have some activity. Because I don't think it's a person sitting on the other end. You're just trying to bypass their whatever they, what algorithms they have to see if you're that real person or not. So that's what I do, really, posting daily. So that first little while, you're almost like treating it like you're taking extra care with that account. And once you do that, I feel like you will bypass that. Like, I mean, I've done it many times, but I have also been there where they ask for government ID. Of course, I'm not going to give them government ID. That's when I start all over. I scratch that and I'm like, okay, let's start all over. What did I do wrong? Those are some quick tips for me.
Yeah, you referenced the phone number, and that's probably the thing that I've always suspected that's getting me caught, is that I don't have an extra phone. So I only have my real phone. And even though I'm putting in, you know, all this fake information, when it asks for a phone number for validation, if I just put in mine, I'm guessing at that point, they're like, all right, so we have our algorithm that can check this phone number, two very different accounts.
Yes.
We're going to flag this here. So I've always guessed that that was probably what I was doing wrong with that.
Exactly. And one of the other tips I give people is, because a lot of people are like, I don't have another phone. But like, I don't know what someone could do is if you have an old phone and you've wiped it clean, and if you have this, like, I mean, I have a couple of old phones lying around, but you know, I use one of them as a burner, but I completely wiped it. I have a SIM card that I paid here where I live. It's like 10 bucks. So it's quite cheap, easy. Like I can buy several, but that's what you would use for your setup for a burner phone. Because I'm not going to go out, and most people don't want to go out and buy a new phone for this because that's going to be expensive probably. But if you have something old, or maybe you have a friend who's like, oh, I got this phone, but it's like almost dead. All you need it for is for that verification, and then you kind of put it away. I mean, once you establish yourself that, I don't know if it's a 2 week, I don't know their algorithm or what it is. Is it 2 weeks? Is it 3 weeks? Once you get past that, you're good to go.
And one of the other things that I think is real interesting with creating these accounts is curating them and keeping them up and staying in there with them. How frequently do you become or do you update as that person? And do you also have considerations of time zones and when you're posting? When you're, do you create your research accounts for specific targets that you're going after? And would you then curate that research account with the same types of interests as your target?
For me, because of like the work I do and I've done over the years, I have separate sock puppet accounts for different types of groups. So there's reasons for that. Even though I'm doing passive OSINT, I don't want to stick out as a suggested friend when the entire target group is, say, South Asian names. Right, I'm not going to go with something like John Smith and be like, "Hey, I'm here," because they're going to pick me out pretty quickly. So we have to remember that sometimes it is good to have a few options if that's possible. I mean, I have that set up, but not everyone does. I definitely wouldn't recommend you trying to edit that first Facebook that you have with like different names as you investigate, because that's going to trigger Facebook shutting you down as well. Or asking for ID, and then you're kind of stuck.
Here's another issue that I've had when I've done some OSINT investigations. I want to see if this has happened to you as well, and if so, how do you handle this? Where I sit down with the client and they say that, you know, they want me to do the investigation. I say, okay, great. What's the goal here? What types of things are we looking for? What are we doing? And they come back with, just see what you can find. I don't know what to do with that. It's like, do you just want a full picture of who this person is? Anything whatsoever? Is that something that comes up with you, or do you get the very specific question that the client is looking for?
It's honestly, the struggle is real to get people to tell me what they're looking for, because if you give them a checklist of five things, they check everything off. So I often have to explain there needs to be a focus. There needs to be an objective for the research, and like a goal, right? In the intelligence world, we would call this the intelligence question. What are you looking for there? So I find that's really, really important to have that conversation with who you're working for. If somebody puts in a request and they're like, ah, I don't know, I want everything, tell me everything, that's not appropriate kind of objective. Like there has to be some focus. It could be, hey, I just want some background on the individual, you know, lifestyle information. What are they posting about? That's very different versus, hey, I just want everything. Everything, I'll be here for a while.
You're only paying me for so many hours to be able to get through this. Or I would imagine that, as you mentioned, that you do law enforcement work. Are they looking for evidence of crime or evidence that this person has done certain things? Is that the type of investigation that you're typically doing?
Well, it could vary because I've worked for law enforcement my entire career, but you know, there could be files where you're asked to find out if they have anything criminal, like related to, you know, maybe firearms on their social media, right? But you could also be asked, like, hey, this person, we're trying to find them. Is there anything on their online profile that suggests they're in Vancouver, BC? And maybe I look and I'm like, no, they're actually in Seattle now. Like, they're not in the country. So this is why that objective can be so different. And you can work on all types of investigations if you're working in this line of work. It depends on like what your portfolio is, but it could take you in so many different places and kind of a lot of twists and turns. But this is why having that objective is so key, because if you want to have a focus, because the amount of stuff people post online and say you have to go through everything looking for everything, that's going to overwhelm you very quickly.
You've probably also heard this, that OSINT is just fancy Googling, which I'm sure just irritates you as well, because we know it's not that. It's far more than that, even though all too often when we're doing our OSINT, Google is going to be a very common tool that we use with that. Some of the social media are also going to be common tools. So Google, Facebook, maybe Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram are probably some of the big ones that you look at. Now, I wanted to see if you have any good stories or experiences with this as well, where I had one when I was investigating a CEO of a company, and there wasn't much available for this person using all of those big name tools, you know, other than what I could find on the company website, until I kind of dug down and looked a little bit further. I found out some of his interests and then dug into some more very niche sites for his interest. And I was able to find what he was doing in foreign countries, which, you know, not so anybody thinks he was doing anything bad. He was a mountain bike rider. And I was able to then find when he was in these countries based on when he was riding his mountain bike, specifically where he was, photos of himself on his bike, people that he was there with, all the different experiences that he had. And it was a website that I had never heard of before, but it was something that mountain bike people that really liked. Do you have experiences or stories with that kind of thing as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a great one, because when you're looking at someone, and I think it's really important to dive into what their interests are, whether it's mountain biking, whether it's something else. Maybe it's, you know, some people it's firearms, it's guns. They're like, oh, I like hunting and I like my guns. There are forums online for all sorts of things. Pick any interest, there's going to be apps to support that. You know, whether you like hiking, there's, you know, All Trails, for example. You know, you have to think of it from the OSINT mindset. Can you pull any information? Can you go directly to some of these places and find who you're looking for? You know, do you know their username that they often use? Are they using it there? Can you do a search? Can you kind of Google dork your way through finding them? Doing advanced searches like site search in Google to see if they're like located on a website. It's actually really fitting, but last year I did a talk a few times called Lesser Known Platforms for OSINT. I presented at like Osmosis in New Orleans in October. And the reason I chose that topic was I really wanted to highlight that there are other platforms out there that people use that aren't Facebook, that aren't Instagram, but they're not covered as much by the OSINT community. Some people do, which is awesome. But for me, like some of those were things that I've worked on, you know, looking at VSCO. A lot of people are like, what is VSCO? And then I showed some examples and they're like, oh my God, I didn't know that. And I'm like, yeah, and that's a certain demographic, right? There's a certain age group that uses that. So sometimes I go directly to VSCO to look for certain people. There's also things like Skype or Zello. Those are all different apps that I would say lesser known, but you know, still used by individuals. But can you look at it from the OSINT perspective? Other things I can mention are when it comes to like really niche ones, some people that are like sick of, you know, mainstream media and they're just like, I'm going to like some alternative sites. Well, there's websites out there that will find or will list all the alternative websites for you, whether it's Gab or Rumble or whatever. There's so many, Truth Social, it can go on and on. But they will search within those websites for keywords. So that's another thing that OSINT people can utilize.
Now I have to ask, what's VSCO?
VSCO I believe it stands for visual company or something like that. Visual supply company. That's what it actually stands for. So it's nothing cool. But it's just, it's like this, it reminds me of Instagram in a way, but you can't, it's limited in a lot of ways as well. Like people use it 'cause you can like filter your photos and all that kind of thing. I feel like a lot of younger people use it. I'm not on VSCO, so I only know of it when I look at it from the investigative lens of like what we can collect and what we can see. It is definitely useful because people will post a lot of things. A really awesome thing about it for us as OSINT people is there's no privacy settings on VSCO. Like you can't privatize anything. So people will put VSCO links in their Instagram bios. I don't know. I think they just tell their friends, but then sometimes they have a private Instagram, but the VSCO is wide open. So I'm like, oh my God, we have a lot of information now. So that happens a lot, and that has happened a lot. But when I say demographic, again, it's like kind of the younger audience in general, but you just never know depending on who your target is, if they're on there or not.
That's amazing to learn a new one there. One thing that I like to ask people who have done investigations with law enforcement is, what are your thoughts or what is your advice for people that are complete amateurs in this, where they haven't done it at all, but they want to help? They see that a crime has happened, they see that something bad has happened, and they're like, I'm going to investigate that. I heard about this amateur person that just dug in and they were persistent and they just kept going until they were able to get the information for law enforcement and then break the case open. Do you have any kind of advice for people like that? And the kind of thought like, you could potentially mess this up if you do it wrong. Anything like that for people that are interested?
Yeah, I mean, really, I think sometimes I know a lot of people want to help, but they can compromise investigations doing that. So I don't recommend that typically. That said, there are things like CTFs out there where if they feel like they want to go help, well, hey, there's trace labs, just as an example, right? They help find missing people. How awesome is that, right? There are other CTFs as well where you can use your OSINT skills to have a positive impact. So that's just one example. I know there's other organizations as well. I don't have them offhand, but I would recommend doing it in those situations rather than taking something and running with it because you really don't know everything. The public never knows the entire story. Like there's only so much that's put out there on purpose. And if it's an active investigation, you definitely don't know the full story. You'll have tidbits. That's why I think like sometimes we have to like hold back. And if you want to help, you want to be doing it in a manner that's safe. And I think sometimes CTFs, if you want to help, you're still helping. You're still going to have a good experience, I think, learning and working with others. And I highly recommend that.
Yeah, the CTFs are definitely a great way to learn. And like you said, lots of times those actually do help with real investigations and sometimes potentially criminal investigations, but they are kind of in the context of a learning safe environment where people can help each other with those things as well. So you also have another company that you created, Forensic OSINT. What are you doing with that and what's coming out of that?
So Forensic OSINT is a Chrome extension. It is for the purpose of saving online material, page by page, and it is at the court standard. When we say court standard, it means that there's hash values. So if you have to go to court, your documents are timestamped, date stamped. You have a URL on it, and it will stand up to that in that integrity that you need for court purposes. So again, this is like an app that all types of investigations or investigators are going to want. Even if you're whether you're a police officer or like an analyst, or even if you're a fact checker, a journalist, private investigators, this is something for those people. And it is something that you can find on the Chrome Web Store. And yeah, that's what the app's about.
That sounds like it's something that everybody should check out, especially if you're interested in keeping track of your information in that way. Is it a tool that just anybody can use, or is it something that's more for people that have been in the field for a while?
It's a tool anyone can use because we made it also so it's very user friendly. You don't have to be technical to use it. You log in, there's a free version you can try out. You really just need to play around with it and maybe watch some of our videos to see what it is and how it works. But the idea is we don't want to complicate it. We don't want it to be like, hey, you need to go on a week's training to understand it. You can just download it from the Chrome Web Store and take it for a spin and you'll see how it works.
Yeah, and I know you said that it adheres to the court standard, which is, you know, like you described, a pretty high standard of the way that it's going to keep information, which, you know, even if you're doing investigations that don't need to meet that standard, there's nothing wrong with going a little bit further and having all that, because you never know when you're doing the investigation later on, somebody could come back and say, prove to me that that's actually accurate. I think there's nothing wrong with having a higher standard, whether you need to meet something in a court case as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I find like what you like exactly what you're saying, you don't sometimes know. And whether it's your customer, even if you work in the private industry, if someone comes to you and says like, hey, can I have the screen captures? And a lot of people, they're like, oh, I didn't make them in time and I forgot to. We're trying to make it easy so that we fill that gap as well, where people can just simply grab their screen captures. They have that hash value. They have all the information you need. And you have a case management system built into Forensic OSINT that you can rely on. So you have that kind of in your back pocket.
And it's probably also one in a million, a worst case scenario where you are doing an investigation that isn't for law enforcement, but you eventually accidentally stumble into something that becomes a court case. I've talked to some people that sort of thing has happened, where they find things that you know, probably didn't really want to find and didn't want to know that those things were happening. But once you see it and there's certain things that you come across, you kind of have to report them.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. No, that's another reason. It's pretty much if you're investigating people, businesses, or something on the internet, I think why not have something like this? Things are constantly changing on the internet. You want to grab a screen capture. You want to have easy access to something like this. Go give it a try.
This has been so much fun. I always love talking to you. Thanks for coming back to the Layer 8 podcast. This has been Ritu Gill, also known as OSINT Techniques, or you can also find Forensic OSINT. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Layer 8 podcast. Check back every 2 weeks for a new episode talking about OSINT and social engineering. If you have pen test or social engineering needs, Compass CyberGuard can help. Get more information by emailing info@layer8podcast.org.